Good morning and welcome to Storylines on the Bay, 88.7 FM and online at MuskokaOnline.com. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. Our guest today is Tim Inkster, who, with his wife Elka, is co-founder of the Porcupine's Quill, an artisanal book publishing house located in Erin Village, Ontario. Tim, welcome to Storylines.
Glad to be here, finally. As you know, we've been talking back and forth for some weeks while I was completely distracted with an Ontario Arts Council funding application that was due yesterday. So I'm happy to report that the application has been filed.
Great.
We also got some encouraging news yesterday from a shop in Toronto, a non-traditional outlet for us called The Guild Shop on Queen Street, with a really encouraging report about Christmas sales in December. So I'm pumped about that. And I even got a Valentine's present from Revenue Canada, who sent me a letter saying that they have accepted my Ontario Book Publishers tax credit claim as filed, and there will be no audit this year. About every 7 years, they decide to audit. I've done it before. I can do it again, but it's about 3 weeks' worth of accounting work, and I have other things to do. So I'm thrilled about my Valentine's Day present, and the sun is shining.
And that means we can look forward to more books, because you'll have 3 more weeks to produce those beautiful books, Tim.
It means that that hopefully I can stay on my production schedule, yes.
So The Porcupine's Quill, Tim, which you and Elka founded in 1974, has published books on Canadian art and design, book history, memoirs, poetry, and fiction. But the reputation you've developed very carefully and very intentionally is as a house that is preserving the art and craft of book production. Your website says that your production methods use 20th century offset technology to replicate the quality look of a 19th century letterpress product. So could you explain a bit of what that means?
I can try. It has to do with choices, with the sort of choices that we make about paper, for one. Typography would be another one, and these choices are perhaps less common than you might see elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It also has to do with a perverse affection for archaic and very labor-intensive bindery techniques. Porcupine's Quill titles nearly always include hand-tipped colored end leaves, which is not common at all in paperbacks, and our books are also sewn into signatures on an ancient Smythe sewing machine, actually from 1907.
Wow.
So the signatures will never fall apart. I remember a story that was told by Nicholas Pashley, who was a bookseller at the University of Toronto, who once explained to a group of his students that sewn books, Smythe sewn books, are not only strong enough to be used in the discipline of wayward cats, but strong enough that the cat can throw the book back.
And it's true. And signatures, just for listeners who might not know what we're talking about with signatures, signatures are the pieces, or at least the collection of pages, 16 pages or 32 pages in a fold that are then all sewn together. Have I kind of explained that right?
Yeah, that's good. I know what you're talking about. I'm not sure if your listeners will. What it means is that we, after we do the folding, we leave the folds intact when we bind the book. So the pages cannot fall apart the way they do in a so-called perfect bound book, which isn't perfect at all.
Yes, it's glued.
Single pages that fall apart easily.
Right. Now, the Smythe machine is operated by Elka herself.
Mostly, although I'm not too bad. And occasionally, when we get into, when the timing goes off on the thing, Elka asks me to figure out how it works. And, of course, from 1907, there are no manuals. You just have to look at the pieces, you know, the moving parts. This little thing does this, and if it does it at that time, then we move this screw that way, and if that doesn't work, we move it the other way.
So the idiosyncrasies of the machines are part of what makes the process so time-consuming.
Yes, and also it's just it's hand-fed. So regardless of who's running the machine, you have to, by hand, feed 16 pages at a time into the sewing machine. So over 40 years, Alka and I have sewn millions of signatures.
Mm. Tim, one of the things that I was very attracted to the Porcupine's Quill for was the fact that you've acquired titles from little-known authors who have then gone on to wide acclaim, and your titles have garnered numerous literary awards. In fact, your success in bringing new and emerging authors to the attention of wider audiences and mainstream publishers is what we might call legendary, as are the accolades that you've received for book production and design. And you made a statement that good design happens at the intersection of function and form. I'm going to ask you to elaborate a bit on that.
Yeah, that's another challenge. I can try. I'm reminded, for one example, of a limited edition livre d'artiste, like an artist book, you know, called
Yes.
Fabulous Fictions, that was originally a collaboration between the novelist Leon Rook, who is very well known, and printmaker Tony Calzetta, that was originally produced in an edition of just 3 dozen copies that sold for $7,000 each.
That's wow.
$7,000 each. When the Porcupine's Quill, my company, got involved in the project, the challenge from a production point of view was to find a way to make a trade edition that could retail for less than the cost of a case of 2-4 and still retain something of the spirit of the Ultra Deluxe Limited Edition.
Mm.
Now, the big issue was that the artist book featured this elaborate folding pop-up paper sculpture thing that unfolded in a dozen different directions to become something that looked a lot like a theatrical stage.
Oh.
So right away, I was thinking foldouts. We can do foldouts. Process four-color printing on two sides of an extra-wide sheet that would present in the book, at first, the left-hand side of the stage, so to speak.
Right.
Then open once to reveal the middle, and open a third time to complete the triptych.
Uh-huh.
And then when the open foldout was turned over onto the other side, to present the whole stage as a piece. My foldout is obviously nowhere near as complicated as the original, but the foldout does require the reader to open the folded page twice and then turn the page over. So there is a sense of the interactive nature of Calzetta's paper sculpture that is present in the original.
Mm-hmm.
That's the intersection, I think, of function and form.
It's such a good example because I can hear in the way that you're explaining it, Tim, that a tremendous amount of thought went into creating that so that, you know, your brain was ticking over, thinking, how can we include in some way the intent?
Without creating a book that costs $7,000.
It was a little bit less than $7,000 a copy, I'm guessing.
I mean, we were trying to bring that work, that creative work, to the attention of a wider audience. And in a small way, I think we were successful.
Tim, in 2008, you and Alka were appointed to the Order of Canada for your contributions to publishing in Canada, and including the promotion of new authors.
Yeah, that was a big day in our lives.
Well, can you think of markers that make a manuscript jump out at you and tell you that this fits into the Porcupine's Quill mandate?
Editorially, we often try to focus on books that embody the intersection between literature, on the one hand, and the book arts. Between text and image, for example, or memoir and music, or letterpress, the 19th century technology, and offset, the 20th century technology. So one example that comes to mind was a memoir received from Frank Neufeld. This was a huge honor for us because Frank had been, for many years, vice president of publishing at McCollin & Stewart, which is a much, much bigger Canadian publishing company.
Yes.
Though Frank is perhaps best known to your readers, especially not so much as a publisher, but for the illustrations he created for Dennis Lee's poetry book, Alligator Pie.
Yeah.
At the book launch for Frank's memoirs, at a different drummer books in Burlington, we were approached by Laurie Lewis, who had been head designer at the University of Toronto Press. And Laurie asked if we might be interested in more memoirs, and of course we were. So that's a good example of the sort of serendipity that informs a lot of our acquisitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Tim, we're going to be taking a short break in a moment, but when we come back, I'd like to have you tell us a bit more about the Porcupine's Quill series of wordless novels, which I find pretty fascinating. So we're going to pick up there when we come back. You're listening to Storylines on the Bay, 88.7 FM. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. We'll be back to speak some more with Tim Inkster, co-founder of the Porcupine's Quill in Erin Village, Ontario. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Storylines. This is Christine Cowley. Today we're talking about the craft of book creation with our guest, Tim Inkster of the Porcupine's Quill Publishing House in Erin Village, Ontario. Tim, before the break, I mentioned the wordless novels that are part of PQL's list, and I have one in my hands now by George A. Walker, which tells the story of Tom Thompson's death through a series of 109 woodblock engravings. Now, this book, when you first pick it up, it looks beautiful with the woodblock print on the cover. But when you begin to flip through the pages, oh my goodness, after a few pages of introductory text, the story is literally told in these exquisite images by George Walker. So please tell us more about your wordless novels.
The wordless novel series were, in fact, George Walker's idea. And I'm sure that if George were answering this question, he would tell you all about the work of Franz Masriel in Belgium in the 1920s. There is a long history to the wordless novel form. George would also tell you about the American engraver Lind Ward and the Canadian Lawrence Hyde, but I am not particularly an art historian. For myself, I can remember attending Wasegoose festivals of the book arts in Grimsby in the late 1970s, where I admired the work of Gerard Brender of Brandis, who was selling artist prints of his engravings. The thought occurred, to me anyway, that I might be able to make an inexpensive offset edition of a selection of Gerard's images, which I thought would help make his work known to a wider audience. Gerard, of course, is Dutch, so it took me a couple of years to convince the artist that an offset edition could possibly do justice to the intricacy of his engravings. But eventually, we were allowed to release a book that was called Wood, Ink, and Paper in 1980, and it has since sold 5,000 copies through 9 printings, which for us is a huge success. But Wood, Ink, and Paper was simply a selection of individual images. There was no attempt at any sort of a narrative thread.
Okay.
Over the years since 1980, we have published a number of similar wood engraving books with a number of different artists, but it was George Walker who introduced to us the notion of a wordless narrative with his Book of Hours that we published in 2010. The Book of Hours was followed by The Mysterious Death of Tom Thompson that you were just talking about.
Yes.
George also did The Life and Times of Conrad Black, interesting enough. The wordless Leonard Cohen songbook. And most recently, Trudeau, La Vie en Rose. The Trudeau book has a preface written by the current prime minister in which Justin reveals that he was about 5 years old when his father took him to Alert, a Canadian forces base in the high Arctic, where young Justin was shown to the window of a Quonset hut, where the boy could see a bearded man dressed in a red parka working at a bench. This was, of course, the moment when young Justin Trudeau realized just how influential his father actually was.
And one of your many wonderful anecdotes that I wish we had hours and hours to expand upon, that little anecdote about the Trudeaus is just one of many I've heard in our conversations. Tim, you've said that your dedication to the process of bringing beautiful books into the world is much more than simply running a business, a successful business. It is a vocation. And I know you spend a great deal of time writing grant proposals in order to keep the Porcupine's Quill true to its mandate. I wonder, there must be a level of frustration involved with maintaining your vision. So how do you see the future of the book as artifact, as something that is beautiful and pleasurable as much for its physical properties as for its content?
I am a failed Jesuit, so I do understand clearly the demands of a vocation and also the challenges attached to frustration. Naturally, we are enormously grateful for the support we receive, the essential support. I mean, without public funding, we would not have survived 40 years in this crazy business.
Yeah.
We are grateful for the support we receive from the Canada Council, the Ontario Arts Council, the Department of Canadian Heritage, the Ontario Media Development Corporation, and the Ontario Book Publishers Tax Credit Program, particularly in the years when Revenue Canada chooses not to audit our claim. We are also frustrated, you are quite right, by the political agendas of some of these programs, which have very little to do with making good books.
Mm-hmm.
I can easily be upset, for example, trying to explain the mechanics of accounting as it applies to book publishing to an auditor from the Film Services branch of Revenue Canada.
Right.
This has happened
twice.
I can be equally agitated by the argument, common argument, which suggests that the future of book publishing is e-books formatted for the Amazon Kindle machine. We do, somewhat reluctantly, offer PDF format ebooks for sale inexpensively, often just as a marketing tool, but we have pretty much resisted the stampede towards EPUBs designed for smartphones, and that position has led to heated discussions with some of the funding bodies and with Amazon on one memorable occasion when we would not do what they wanted us to do. Our PDF ebooks, for example, almost always include colored end leaves, front and back, and this sort of contrariness drives EPUB coders crazy. On the one hand, we did just this past year sell several hundred PDF copies of George Walker's edition of Alice in Wonderland, and we sold them in countries where we would normally sell nothing at all. So that's positive, and we are appreciative of that opportunity to broaden our sales base.
And to show that there are different ways of accomplishing the same goal.
Absolutely.
Tim, I think speaking with you, I personally, because I respond to the tactile pleasures of a book, and you give me hope for the future of the book. It's really been a pleasure talking to you about the Porcupine's Quill and the creation of beautiful book. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. My favorite topic.
You've been listening to Storylines on the Bay, CKAR Radio, 88.7 FM, and online at muskokaonline.com. Today, we've been speaking with publisher Tim Inkster about the Porcupine's Quill, an artisanal publisher located in Erin Village, Ontario. We've mentioned a few of PQL's titles throughout this interview, but we're actually going to be interviewing a number of authors whose books reside in the Porcupine's Quill House. I'm really looking forward to that. And we're going to start with Bruce Meyer, Barrie's first poet laureate, who will be joining us on March 16th to talk about his new release, Portraits of Canadian Writers. I've read the book. It is wonderful. I also want to give a shout out to Erin Radio, 91.7 FM in Erin Village, Wellington County, who we are delighted to be partnering with for a rebroadcast of this interview on their stations in the near future. You've been listening to Storylines. This is Christine Cowley. I'm here every Thursday morning at 10:05 a.m. talking to authors and book folks about books and the writing life. Thanks for listening. Please join us again.